time now for hour number two of this weekend's two-hour installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here's the host of the show, Carol Marks, in conversation with Richard Gabriel. He's a renowned trial consultant of 28 years who's worked on more than 1,000 criminal and civil cases across the United States. He's an expert on court psychology, and he's going to talk to Carol about his new book titled Acquittal, An Insider Reveals the Stories and Strategies Behind Today's Most Infamous Verdicts.
What does a trial consultant do, and what got you interested in being one, and do you usually work on the defense side or the prosecution side?
Well, some people will say that I'm sort of genetically engineered to be a trial consultant, as my mother is a judge and my father is a psychologist. I found out very early in my life that I was always fascinated with law, but didn't really want to become a lawyer, but was just interested in the way people ticked. And when I got finished with school, I started teaching communication classes at a university and saw a lot of lawyers that showed up in my classes. And I got to thinking that this would be an interesting way. I watched them in court, and I saw sometimes that the messages they wanted to get across to the jury just wasn't getting across. So I thought this might be an interesting way for me to apply both the psychology and the communication elements of my background into the legal world, which I'd always found fascinating.
Do you usually work on the defense side or the prosecution side?
Well, I work on both sides. I mean, I work primarily on civil cases, but I do probably a little bit more work on the criminal defense side, and I will do some work periodically for the prosecution side, so it sort of depends on what comes in the door, what we find interesting.
In your book, you pointed out something that I had never thought about, and that was that we have, you gave them names, we have several justice systems, one of which you call a capital J justice, which you say really dictates the laws of our land. So what the heck is that all about?
Well, as I looked at it, I realized we think of our justice system as one system, and we don't. We have four justice systems. I outline in the book that there's the capital J justice, which is, you know, most recently we look at the Supreme Court and they pass down laws about Hobby Lobby or about, you know, gun rights or about these different areas, and that becomes sort of the leading dictum of how we behave. They make the rules, they make laws by which we all abide. I then talk about sort of the lowercase justice, which is really the sort of the rigorous and sometimes frustrating grinding process by which lawyers and judges in jurisdictions all across the land try and apply those laws to people both in civil lawsuits and also criminal cases. Then I talk about this thing I call more headline justice or capital, you know, sort of exclamation point justice, which is we see in our in headline news and on CNN and in Law and Order and in CSI, and sort of this blend of entertainment and news stuff and how we think of the justice system in the public eye. And then I talk most primarily in the book about what I call jury justice, which is really how juries go about applying justice and making decisions in their cases.
And that's what's so particularly fascinating in the book when you get into that. You know, you mentioned cases that were in the headlines. So in the book, you talk about the O.J. Simpson trial, which you were involved in as a jury consultant. And since it's the 20th anniversary of this case, did you and his defense team come up with a theme for the case? And I never thought that that's what people did sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the truth is that in these very big, complicated cases, you want to come up with something that the jury can sort of use to really think about this big, complicated case in a simpler way. And originally, our theme was a rush to judgment because, in our view, the police really had targeted O.J. Simpson very early on. They only really wanted to collect evidence to implicate him as opposed to sort of objectively looking at all the evidence in the case. But after the glove incident in court, where O.J. tried on that famous glove and it didn't fit, Jerry Yeoman, in thinking about it, came up with that great phrase, if it doesn't fit, you must acquit. And that became sort of a marching theme for the jury in their final deliberations.
And so somehow you just felt that all the evidence didn't come together. Is that about it?
One of the things that I talked about in the chapter on this case was this sort of interesting thing that happened, which is, you know, the prosecution felt like they had this overwhelming mountain of evidence. But the more the jury looked at it, the more they started seeing that they had some questions and some holes and little uncertainties about really what happened and whether this piece of blood evidence really was there or whether it had been planted there. And so what emerged over all that time, despite there looking like there was a lot, for the jury who put a microscope on this stuff and knew that they had O.J. Simpson's kind of future in their hands, they started questioning and came up with their own reasonable doubt.
And you said that sometimes in celebrity cases that it is kind of a choice whether you're going to go with the celebrity's great, you know, abilities and how he is perceived positively in the public versus some of the forensic and the scientific evidence that just wasn't properly done or people felt it wasn't.
Right, and I think you're speaking when in the chapter I read about Phil Spector. This was the sort of the struggle on the team because there were parts of the team that really wanted to present his greatness and his celebrity, and you know the person who's been famous wants to rehabilitate their image, and yet you know in that case, in the Phil Spector case, we found that we didn't want them to focus on Phil. We wanted them to focus on the scientific evidence, which really was the one we felt exonerated him. So that was sort of the struggle in that case. You always have to look in these legal cases, what is the most compelling thing that will drive the jury to the verdict you want? And that's sort of what we looked at.
Jumping to the Casey Anthony case, I can remember exactly where I was when I heard the verdict, and I had a fit. So you were also the trial consultant on it. It was a death penalty case, and you said that in those kinds of cases that your jury selection is much more difficult, and yet the jury acquitted her. So can you give us an idea about why you think that happened?
Well, yes. The truth is that in a case like that, you know, there are two juries in those cases, and one of the juries is sitting at home and gets to see, you know, these months, if not years, of pundits and news anchors talking and giving their opinion about the case and looking at, you know, seemingly damning evidence before the jury is actually impaneled. And so what ends up happening is the jury, you know, has already prejudged the case. When we did a focus group in Orlando, we found that people had already found her guilty. But then an interesting thing happened, and this is where, in both the O.J. Simpson and the Casey Anthony case, the publicity worked against the prosecution because jurors sort of then couldn't distinguish that sensationalized coverage. Everything they'd heard about and all the sort of condemning pundits, and they couldn't separate that from actual evidence. And when they really put on their juror hats and said, I'm going to look at this seriously with very, very, you know, high-powered microscope, they looked at it and they said, boy, we got some real problems here. And in the Casey Anthony case especially, I think the jury looked at it and went, wait a minute, she's being charged with a death penalty crime, the most serious of crimes where she could be put to death for this, and so I better be really certain if I want to convict her of that. And I think that's one of the dynamics that played against the prosecution and ultimately ended in her acquittal.
Now, you talked about, you know, the tremendous amount of publicity high-profile cases get, and you also talked about, and you are as concerned as I am about, the effect that all the media and the journalists and the camera and the Internet have on these cases because they're creating a combative conclusion between a couple of our rights. So I wondered if you would comment on that.
Yeah, I mean it's funny because there's a you know, especially lately, we have, you know, especially with some recent rulings by the Supreme Court, you know, we have decided that the First Amendment is sacrosanct, the right to free speech, and it's one of our cornerstones of our democracy. However, another cornerstone is the Sixth Amendment, which is we're entitled to a fair and impartial jury. Well, when you have tremendous publicity about a case, and you have a jury pool that's already heard about it and to a certain extent made their decisions up about that case, then impartiality kind of goes out the window. So you need to balance this out. You know, judges, journalists, and the parties in the case really need to sit down and figure out how are we going to give this defendant a fair and impartial trial while still giving journalists the ability to let the public know what's going on.
Richard Gabriel in conversation with Carol Marx. His book is titled Acquittal, An Insider Reveals the Stories and Strategies Behind Today's Most Infamous Verdicts, published by Berkeley. You're plugged into A Touch of Gray. The program continues in just a moment.
A domain name is your key to doing business around the world, right from your office, living room, or even your couch. And finding the right name is as easy as a domain name search at hostingforcheap.com. Just enter the domain you want in the search box and we'll give you the results, along with similar domains you may not have considered. Most people looking for goods or services start on the web. Unfortunately, many small businesses can't afford to pay someone else to build their website. That's where hostingforcheap.com comes in. We can show you how to create a website for yourself, because hostingforcheap.com isn't just about domain names. It's a one-stop shop for anything you need to get online, from building your own website to attracting new customers to securing their data when they make a purchase. Hostingforcheap.com has you covered from the moment you decide you want to put your business on the web. That's hostingforcheap.com. Hostingforcheap.com. Hostingforcheap.com.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here's your host, Carol Marx, in conversation with Michael Blanding. He's the author of a book titled The Map Thief, the gripping story of an esteemed rare map dealer who made millions stealing priceless maps, published by Gotham Books.
Didn't your book come about partly because of your love for old maps? So when did you first become intrigued by them, and what's kept your enthusiasm for them growing? Because I now understand that you collect maps.
I do, yeah, and I've been interested in maps and a lover of maps for as long as I can remember. You know, I remember when I was a kid and a teenager, I used to love reading fantasy novels. And, you know, any fantasy novel fan out there knows that, you know, one of the most important elements of the book is having that map right up front that shows you where the characters are going to go and where the action is going to unfold. And I just remember looking at those maps for hours when I was a kid. And then later, you're right, I had a professor in college. He used to collect subway maps, international subway maps of different systems around the world, and had them hanging in his house. And I was so intrigued by that idea that when I started traveling myself after college and over the years, every time I go to a new city, I try to get the subway map of that city, you know, the official map hanging in the station. And I've got about 10 or 12 of them hanging on my walls now, so I understand the interest and the addiction of map collecting as much as the characters in my book.
Now, you've done a tremendous amount of research. Your book subject, the respected map dealer, E. Forbes Smiley. Now, he turned out to be an obsessive map thief, but he was originally very interested in the map world. What got him interested in rare maps in the first place?
He is really a fascinating character. You know, I say character even though it's a true story, because he really was a character, and a real mass of contradictions. You know, on the one hand, you have this person who grew up in a small town in New England and was absolutely fascinated with history. And that love of history later grew into a love of maps, and he became one of the most knowledgeable and most respected experts on the mapping, particularly of North America, the early exploration of North America between about 1500 and 1800. And for about almost 30 years, he was really one of the preeminent experts in that field.
Now, talking about his personality and character, it certainly was unusual. And you say that he had two very different sides to him. Really, he was charismatic, he was professional. But how did he do with the business side, which you have to have when you're in business?
Yeah, you're exactly right about there being two different sides to him. You know, he's not the image that you might have of kind of the stereotypical, you know, bookish map dealer. He was really, he was this larger than life, really friendly, gregarious, had this great booming voice and this great laugh. And, you know, friends and colleagues alike were really just taken by his charm. And then on the other hand, he was a miserable business person. He was always overextending himself, always kind of chasing after money that he didn't have, and spending money way too quickly, and never really focusing on the aspects of the business that he really needed to in order to survive long term as a map dealer. And so then in the 1990s, when maps suddenly became popular and new dealers started entering into the field, some of whom were you know, very ambitious and some would even say cutthroat in their business practices, and competing with him at auction, he found himself just really unable to compete.
Now, I found that the most amazing thing I learned about him was the fact that really he acted like a Robin Hood for a little town in central Maine, and he lost an awful lot of money trying to be Robin Hood. So what was he trying to do for this little town?
That was one of the aspects that really drew me in as well and convinced me that it was really a book here, because it was such a kind of grandiose project that he embarked upon to try to save this small town up in northern Maine, you know, that you can barely even find on a map. And he wanted to create this kind of perfect frozen in time image of a New England village, and spent more than $1 million renovating the general store and post office and starting a restaurant and restoring this old farmhouse. And, you know, it's really ironic that a lot of the money that he acquired from stealing these maps actually went to this, you know, public improvement project of this small town up in Maine. And he really was looked at as a Robin Hood by many of the residents there who he employed and who shared the same vision of the town. However, unfortunately, there were other people in town who didn't quite share the same vision of historic preservation, and they wanted to build a marina with speedboats and an ice cream shop, and he ended up getting into a big feud with them and a big legal battle ultimately, which cost him a lot of money and led to him stealing even more maps.
You know, there is no such thing, unfortunately, as a perfect place. So I really, I enjoyed that part of it. And so, you know, he was in all this debt, and you know, what intrigued me was that he figured out a way to get out of debt by stealing maps from a library. So what was his plan, and didn't he damage the maps with the methods he used? Because that concerned me.
Yeah, he absolutely did. And, you know, it's really a tragedy because he spent, you know, decades building up relationships with these institutions and, with the librarians who were really the stakeholders of these collections. And, over the years, he, began to be almost like a colleague to some of them. He helped some of them acquire some of their collections, and he would go into research maps and teach them things about the maps and their own collections. So they really let down their guard with him and probably gave him more access than the average patron. And he could go in and request a book and would wait till somebody's back was turned and literally just rip these maps right out of these old books. And, you know, certainly caused them damage. And sometimes he would take them, and in order to obscure where they came from, he would cut them down to a different size, or he would bleach the paper. In some cases, he even would paint the maps to color them to obscure where they came from. So he was really taking this, you know, priceless cultural heritage and defacing it and deforming it and, you know, really betraying these people that had trusted him over the years.
Now, I've always wondered what makes an old map valuable, and he happened to have a John Smith map, which was unique, that he stole, and I guess it was a map of Boston. So how much money could it be sold for, and why was it so valuable?
The John Smith map?
Yes.
Yeah, that John Smith map of New England was one that he was caught with when he was arrested. And, you know, the funny thing about maps is they're not like pieces of art where you have, you know, one painting and it's hanging in the museum and everybody knows where it is. You could have, you know, maybe a dozen copies of a particular map. But depending on when the map was printed, on what book it was in, on the condition, you know, a number of different factors, it can be worth dramatically different amounts of money to collectors who are always looking for that rare item, that one-of-a-kind item that that the other collector doesn't have. And so the John Smith map that he stole from the Yale University Library could easily go for $50,000. You know, one of them hadn't appeared at auction for a generation. And so that made it just incredibly valuable, and he, among all people, knew just how valuable it was.
That's Michael Blanding in conversation with Carol Marks. The book is titled The Map Thief, the gripping story of an esteemed rare map dealer who made millions stealing priceless maps. And the book is published by Gotham Books. Coming up in the next segment, we'll be joined by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer. We're going to talk a little bit about the frustrations of going to your favorite website and finding it's been redesigned, and finding that even though it may be considered technologically more modern, it no longer serves the purposes you had in mind. That's next, when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and the rest of the way we're going to be joined by our senior correspondent, Richard Neer, who just a few minutes from now will be talking with Dr. Jack Waters. He's Pfizer's Vice President for External Medical Affairs. He's responsible for relationships with medical societies, academic institutions, and government health bodies around the globe. And he's going to talk to Richard about the Get Old Survey. That sounds interesting, the Get Old Survey. And he'll give tips on how men can live longer, healthier lives. Well, Richard, that sounds like something interesting. You already spoke to him. Can you give us a little teaser?
Well, I'm going to change the subject a little bit here, but one of the things that is shortening my life is my frustration with one of my favorite websites.
Oh?
Sports Illustrated.
I see. I see. I have to tell you, I agree. I am a big fan of Sports Illustrated. And I think their website not only, of course, has all of that great Sports Illustrated sports stuff that we like to read, everything from the standings of our teams to tremendous insights, but one of the things that I have liked over the years is Sports Illustrated's format, how easy it is to follow. They have the standard menu across the top with all the different sports. You click on it, and bingo, you're into a whole...
Ah, but that is no more. About a month ago, they changed their website.
Mm-hmm.
And now, in order to find, let's say, something as simple as the baseball standings, you have to navigate through a whole bunch of stuff that you couldn't care less about, and maybe, just maybe, you'll find those standings. And it's really frustrating. I hate to sound like a curmudgeon saying, get off my lawn here, but, you know, they've incorporated all these videos, and I don't go to Sports Illustrated necessarily for videos. I want to read something, get some information, and I can't find it anymore.
Yeah, the video thing is really controversial because obviously websites, news websites, media websites, I call them media stations, they should have video, they should have audio, they should have text, they should have graphics, they should have the entire, you know, array of different types of media so that the visitor, I want to say the reader, the visitor can pick and choose whatever they want, and the producers can have many different modes of conveying information. However, when the video supersedes the text, in other words, when you go to, say, CNN.com or you go to ESPN.com or you go to SportsIllustrated.com or NewYorkTimes.com, and you basically want information, I find that reading it is quicker and more direct into the brain than sitting and watching a video. First, you got to go through the darn commercial, sure, and, you know, click here after 4 seconds, and, you know, and then sometimes it takes a long time to load, and then sometimes it says you do not have the latest format.
Yeah, you have to download another app to get it.
Right, it does not take
Flash.
Is it possible
that they think that the younger generation is,
yes,
not interested in reading? They need everything to be visual, so we have to show video as opposed to, hey, let me get a quick 2 or 3 paragraph information. That's what I'm looking for. And instead, I've got to endure a 4-minute video that may not even answer my question.
Yeah. See, on our talkers.com, the website for Talkers Magazine, which I'm involved in, and radioinfo.com, the magazine for music radio, we're very cognizant of that, and we have video, we have audio only links, we have video links, but you don't have to have the video come first. We're ultimately text oriented, and because that's the way I think most reasonable people go to the website and seek information. I was very disappointed with Sports Illustrated, and frankly, I don't go there anymore because I don't have the latest version of every app. I don't have the latest version of every platform. And when he says, you know, you can't load this up unless you get, well, I don't have time to get. I want to find out where the heck the Mets are this week and where the Red Sox are and where the Yankees are and how the Dodgers are doing out in L.A.
Well, and are they now narrowing their audience to super serve the dyed-in-the-wool sports fan who has nothing to do but look at the computer
and sports stuff every day? I have no idea specifically why Sports Illustrated is doing what they're doing. This is not meant to be a criticism of it. You brought it up. I was trying to talk about men's health. You changed the subject, and now my blood pressure is rising, and so I'm achieving just the exact opposite of what I hoped. But that being said, I'm not attacking Sports Illustrated, but they're a great example because you and I both agree, we're both users of that website, that something has gone awry, at least for our taste. I think what it has to do with is the technical guys, the people that are in the business of designing websites, the people who claim to be experts on something that is so new, there hasn't been enough time for there to be experts, but they know how to press the buttons and make the gizmos work. They are taking over the minds of the editorial people and the creative people and the journalists into thinking that if they don't have the latest bells and whistles, they're falling behind. That somehow,
exactly,
yeah, somehow the readers, the visitors are going to go, whoa, look at this. This was last year's template.
Well,
they don't
isn't
have the latest
this something
template
that I think everybody of a certain age is concerned about? We say, oh, we don't want to be left behind. We don't want to be considered the old fogies who resist technology. So we'll just go along with the new technology, whether it really works or not, because obviously these younger people are experts at it. They know what we don't know. They see the future and we don't. So we better go along with them as opposed to kind of a, okay, prove it to me
there
attitude.
There is that element. I think, though, that the people, and again, I might be talking through my hat, and I apologize to anybody involved if I am specifically when we use Sports Illustrated as an example, but on a broad strokes level, I mean what I'm saying, that I bet you the people that are talking to the powers that be at Sports Illustrated to change the website from where they had it to the new modern version are not sports fans. I'll bet you they're just geek fans. They're techno fans. They're website designers. They can't allow. How many emails a day do you get from people saying, "Let me fix your website. I'm an expert. We've tested it." Blah, blah. This is a competitive business. They can't allow their competitors to get a jump on them. So it's. Well, you know what? We're running out of time. We're going to hear your interview with Dr. Jack Waters. It should prove to be very interesting, as all of your interviews are. And then when we come back, I'm going to give you an analogy from the radio station point of view to what I'm talking about in terms of letting the technical guys run the programming guys. Okay? So
all right.
We're talking with Richard Neer. Richard Neer is going to be talking with Dr. Jack Waters about how men can live longer, healthier lives. That's next. And then we're going to talk more about this fascinating topic that I'll bet you each and every person listening to this broadcast thinks about, if not publicly, privately, and it's all part of this new world into which we are rapidly hurtling. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. Richard Neer is with us, and you're plugged into A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here as promised is Richard Neer in conversation with Dr. Jack Waters. He's Pfizer's Vice President for External Medical Affairs, responsible for relations with medical societies, academic institutions, and government health bodies around the globe. He's going to talk to Richard about the Get Old survey, giving tips on how men can live longer, healthier lives.
Dr. Waters, first of all, we've always heard women live longer than men. Why is that, and is there something we can do about it?
Well, women do traditionally live longer than men, and of course they have genetics on their side, but we're closing that gap.
And the most recent data that we have seen have shown that the gap between men and women is closing. We've just added about 4 years to our longevity in men. We may never close the gap, who can say, but there's still a lot that we can do to improve not only our longevity, but the quality of our life as we live longer.
And what are some of the key factors in that four-year gain that men have made?
Without a doubt, improvements in heart disease, heart attacks, strokes, so cardiovascular, cerebrovascular disease, and also in cancers. There's no doubt that across the population, we've seen great improvements.
Now, Doctor, it's stereotypical, but it tends to be true that men are much more reluctant to seek medical aid than women. You know, the men will have to be forced to go to the doctor when something's bothering them. They've always been educated to be stoic and strong and not admit weakness. Have we made any progress on that front?
Well, I think we have made progress, and I think that is demonstrated in the years that we've been able to add to men's life expectancy. There's no doubt that improved attitudes and increase in healthy practices have made a difference. Men are finally learning from the women in their lives who have traditionally taken an enlightened approach to seeking help and prevention. And I think men are now stepping out from the shadow of being macho and stoic. And there's nothing to be gained from not seeking help.
Now, there's some tips you can give us about keeping your mind sharp, because I know that's something that a lot of us worry about with the incidence of Alzheimer's seemingly on the rise, the idea that we may not be in 20 years what we used to be. What about keeping the mind and the body sharp?
Well, it's important to keep both of them sharp, and there's no doubt that exercise not only improves the body, muscle strength, and your general fitness, but it also helps with the mind. And your improved attitude that comes from being a regular exerciser really helps your thought processes and keeps you sharp. Simple things also, like balancing your checkbook in your head without reaching for that calculator, that can keep you sharp. Reading. Showing an interest, taking the newspaper every day, or going online. And I think that these are all things we can do.
Are you suggesting, I'm hearing from what you're saying, that sometimes these passive activities where we allow the computers to do our work for us, we allow we take shortcuts as opposed to doing it in our heads or finding answers the hard way. Does that kind of, if you will call it mental laziness, kind of contribute to maybe losing it later on?
Yes, it can. And I think we can all test ourselves and see if you remember your friend's telephone number. So many of us have these keyed into our contacts. And when you have to remember the cell phone of your wife or your spouse, see if you can actually remember it. And these are just do that every now and again, and I think that can really help.
And is there a place we can go to get more information on helping us age better?
Absolutely, there are a couple of great websites that I would recommend your listeners to go to. The first one is the Men's Health Network .org. That has a library of downloadable information targeted at men on how to help them age successfully and well. And the other website is getold.com. That has some great information, not just for men. It's across genders and across ages. And a life course approach to healthy aging is really important. But getold.com and menshealthnetwork.org.
Dr. Jack Waters in conversation with Richard Neer. If you'd like more information, go to getold.com. That's getold.com. If you want a lot of information, go to our website, atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. I'm Michael Harris, and Richard Neer returns when A Touch of Gray continues in just a moment.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engines.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. We continue our discussion with Richard Neer as we come to the final segment of our big two-hour weekend broadcast. Okay, Richard, I was telling you earlier, a couple of segments ago, that I would mention an analogy to our conversation before about the idea that perhaps the techno geeks are influencing the programming and news guys at websites as to how the website should be designed. It would be like running a radio station, running a music radio station, and having the chief engineer program the music based upon how the records are recorded. That they have great drums, the sound of the highs and the lows is great, as opposed to the feeling of the music, the melody of the music, whether you can dance to it and all of that.
I would agree. But here's another bone I have to pick with all of these websites. Mm-hmm. And I'm really going to come off as sounding ancient here. But why Sports Illustrated, every website that concentrates on sports, you are assaulted by pictures of nearly naked women on every one of these sites. Now, look, I appreciate naked women as much as the next guy.
No, the bad word is nearly. They should be completely naked.
But I was a Playboy subscriber when I was a kid and all of that.
Really?
But my idea is if I want sports, I want to read my sports, I'd be distracted by, you know, all these women in various states of undress when I'm trying to find out who won the game last night.
I know. Why would they think that men who are interested in sports, which is, of course, the highest level of intellectual pursuit, why would they think that men interested in sports would be possibly interested in having their attention diverted by women, scantily clad women. Who came up with such an idea?
Maybe it's my old radio training where I think when you go somewhere, you should. It's like turning on a tap. You want cold water, you want hot water. Yeah. If I want to look at scantily clad women, I know where I can find them. Mm. I don't need to go to the sports section to be assaulted by these pictures and these wags, they call them, wives and girlfriends of the sporting figures.
Right.
Why do I need that
Don't you find it interesting that here we're talking about Sports Illustrated, and we're sort of entering up into a new can of worms here, but isn't it funny that the biggest item of the year in Sports Illustrated's repertoire is the swimsuit issue?
Mm-hmm.
What the heck is that? Yeah, maybe at Talkers we should have a swimsuit issue.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I mean, there once was a thread that they can hang on that, saying, "Well, you know, we go swimming. You know, it's a sport and all
yeah,
that."
Right.
Now it's just completely gratuitous. Where okay, let's see how much we can get away with, how much we can show without going over that line. And it's really cheap and tawdry. And I wish they would leave that to Hugh Hefner.
What it is really is a lame attempt at trying to do what they think will create more unique visitors and hits. We have the same situation looking at radio station websites around the country, particularly in the music arena, not so much in talk. Music stations, and it's a controversy within our business, many, many, many music stations, especially Top 40 and Classic Rock, they have on their website sections that they call babes, the babe of the day. And some people feel that that distracts from the purpose of it. If you don't have babes on the air, why do you have to have babes on your website? Your website should reflect the culture that you do on the radio. But there's this feeling again. These are the experts, the consultants. Put babes in bikinis. You get more people coming. Of course, you may lose the fans that are coming for the reason that you're there to begin with. Interesting stuff, Richard. Thank you very much. Richard Neer joins us regularly, a senior correspondent with us here in A Touch of Gray. Thanks to him. Thank you, Kevin Casey. Thank you, Steve Wiseman. Thank you, Beverly Santanello, our producer on the front line. A gigantic expression of gratitude to the great lady, Carol Marks, the host and founder of the show. And on behalf of all of us, I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another 2-hour installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.